Well, I lost my breath giving out all the Twitter handles you guys have over there.
Just a couple.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of things we're going to get to. I want to talk about SEC football media day next week and just where this team is heading in, you know, obviously the stretch run to the camp opening and everything. But I do have a question. It came out this week sort of out of left field. Albert Haynesworth here in Nashville at Vanderbilt Hospital. His kidneys failed this past Sunday. He's in need of a transfer and through a transplant. And as of last night, over 1,000 calls and possible donors. But, I mean, did this come out of left field?
A little bit. I mean, like he maybe not to everyone, but certainly to a lot of people, I think it did. You know, I think certainly he had been having some health-related issues, but certainly didn't think anything that had risen quite to this level. So, obviously, pretty devastating to hear that it had gotten to that point, and it's heartwarming to hear that kind of response. Obviously, that many people have reached out and are interested in helping, and hopefully there will be a match for him that will work out, and everything will get taken care of. But that's a tough situation, obviously, for anyone to go through, and certainly he's a one of the more prominent former Tennessee players to come out in the last couple of decades. So I know that's a guy that means a lot to Tennessee, to Tennessee Titans fans for that matter. So certainly hope for the best for him, and hope that situation can lead to a match, a possible donor there, and everything will work out okay in the long run.
You know, and the thing about it, always very likable. I mean, when he played here, and you know, he had some issues on and off the field, but always. And I remember meeting him when he was just a freshman and sophomore, and just a big old kid, quite frankly, at Tennessee during his first few years there, and then obviously got the money and seemingly took care of his business and everything. He's not one of those that, you know, just blew all of his money and everything. But you know, a lot of people, it is amazing the memories that people have of Albert Haynesworth are almost entirely positive.
Yeah, I mean, certainly he had his bumps in the road, but yeah, he was a very likable guy, I think, for most of his career, and certainly I think he's someone who really, I think, is a poster child for the kind of the development you can have in your college career. Everyone remembers sort of this dominant guy on the interior of Tennessee's defensive line alongside John Henderson, and they were that for a year or two. But early in his career, he didn't quite put it together that fast. So sometimes it takes a little bit for the light bulbs to come on, and he was an example of that. But once it came on, he was really good for several years there, especially in the NFL, and obviously was one of the first $100 million defensive linemen getting that big contract that didn't exactly work out perfectly with the Washington Redskins, but still an impressive career, and certainly hope the best for him. He's you know, haven't heard many issues with him over the years. Just a pretty likable guy, and sometimes honest, maybe to a fault in some of his comments.
Well, that's obviously the outpouring has been pretty amazing. As mm-hmm. of last night, at least 1,000 inquiries about possible donors. So, but he is seemingly, the report was as of last night as well, that he was responding to the therapy and the treatment. So that's a good thing. Ryan Callahan with us, Go Vols 24/7. Just a few other things. I always find it funny. The secondary violations, because every school has them, okay? I mean, you're almost, with your compliance, it's just a matter of keeping up with them, reporting. There's nothing usually that comes out of them except just maybe a public admonishment. But, I mean, and you know what I'm talking about. Jeremy Pruitt, Plainville, Alabama basketball team, boys basketball team, repeated as state champions. He sent out a congratulations to his alma mater, congratulated the team, congratulated the coach and everything. And the tweet back, I guess, this spring was deleted within 37 minutes. All, you know, there were one of nine level threes in the first month of 2019. Really nothing. But, yeah, I mean, if we've gone too far that a a head coach cannot congratulate his high school alma mater on winning a not even the same sport, the boys' state basketball championship. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those rules that seems, when you think about it, it makes perfect sense, because if you were allowed to do this freely, you know, you might have tweets from coaches all the time congratulating every high school on every Friday night win in football and things like that. It might get a little out of hand, and it is a sort of a public recruiting tool that would be a very subtle way of directly mentioning a prospect when you're otherwise not allowed to. But still, this is a little bit excessive, you would think. I mean, a guy went to the school and is congratulating him, like you said, another sport. So it's one of those rules that you understand maybe the spirit of it, what they're trying to get at, but in this case, it certainly seems a bit excessive. And also, you know, kind of crazy, Tennessee ended up paying a little bit of a price for that. It wasn't a major violation, but they lost a few evaluation days during the spring evaluation period as a result of that. So that's not an insignificant penalty. It's not the end of the world, but that's a few fewer days that you can have, you know, assistant coaches on the road. You know, each day that a coach is out, you know, if you have 9 coaches on the road, that counts as 9 of your evaluation days if they're out on the same day. So that's 4 fewer coaches you can have out one day, or 4 fewer days you can have out one coach. That's a bit of a punishment there. So the fact that they got a little more than just a slap on the wrist or admonishment is even crazier when you look at this story and what it really was.
Ryan Callahan at Ryan Callahan 24/7. Go Vols 24/7 on Twitter as well. He's the recruiting editor and all the other stuff he does for Go Vols 24/7. SEC Football Media Days is Monday through Thursday in Birmingham. I know there are reports out. There's no surprise that everybody's sort of thinking that the building that I'm in right now, the Omni Nashville Hotel, and across the street, the Music City Center, this is where SEC Football Media Days is going to be next year.
There's certainly a lot of, I think, momentum for that, and I will be surprised if it's not held there in the near future, whether it's next year or at some point down the road. It's kind of interesting to me that it makes sense, but it's interesting that that's become one of the events that they've thought about sort of taking on the road. A lot of people, after it was in Atlanta last year, a lot of people sort of thought, you know, why are we doing this? You know, it wasn't in some ways an ideal setup in Atlanta last year. A lot of people thought you had to kind of split it between a hotel and the College Football Hall of Fame. It was a pretty cool venue, but it had some logistical concerns that just haven't been there over the years because everyone's sort of gotten used to the setup in Hoover, Alabama at the Winfrey Hotel where they've had it for years. And so it's interesting they're taking this on the road. It's cool for the fans who go because there are some fans who sort of camp out in the lobby and get autographs. And it may turn into a bigger event at a place like Nashville that obviously has such a good setup there downtown. But it's interesting to a lot of people that the SEC is sort of wanting to take this around. With the SEC having such a big footprint, I guess it makes sense. But certainly once you heard that they wanted to do that with it, I think Nashville – a pretty natural choice and set up and geographically kind of centrally located. So I'll be pretty surprised if it's not there really soon. And certainly, like you said, as early as next year, I think it's a possibility.
You know, everybody wants to come to Nashville. We welcome visitors, just don't stay. Okay.
That's right. And don't ride the pedal taverns too much, right?
Yeah, well, you know, that I'm afraid that toothpaste is out of the tube. But anyway, SEC Football Media Days, Monday through Thursday, UT will be going on Thursday. Daniel Batuli, senior linebacker, junior cornerback Jarrett Garantano, and then senior linebacker Daryl Taylor. What are going to be some of the storylines, first for the players, that are going to come out of that?
Yeah, certainly. I think for Jarrett Garantano, obviously, it's to me, this is a big sign of kind of a step in his maturation process, that, you know, Tennessee's got more trust in him, I think, than they did at one point. Last year, Jeremy Pruitt and that staff didn't make him available to talk to media very often. The only times during the season, for at least most of the season, that we spoke with him were after wins. We spoke with him after the Auburn game, and I think that was the first time he had talked all season because they won that game on the road. So they were very cautious with it in the past. He's sort of a guy who wears his emotions on his sleeve a little bit. And that can lead to him being, you know, maybe honest to a fault in some cases, but he's a very good and engaging interview. I think he'll do really well in that session, but that kind of trust and I think maturation you've seen in him
it is noteworthy that Jeremy Pruitt is sending Jarrett Garantano, even though he had sort of the face of the program. I don't think he would have done that a year ago, and obviously he didn't. For Daniel Bacciulli, I think he kind of becomes the de facto leader of this defense in a way, but Daryl Taylor's maybe right there with him. But Daryl Taylor, to me, is the really interesting one because this is a guy who I think has really devoted himself off the field and the weight room, all those things this year to really have a big year, and has come a long way off the field. I wouldn't say he was immature, but certainly he's well remembered by Tennessee fans for some explicit language he used in a fan shot video going out on the field before the game at Bristol a few years ago. It became sort of a hashtag for him and Tennessee fans on Twitter. And so since then, he's, I think, become a much, much more well-rounded on and off the field kind of guy and a good leader in the locker room. And as a fifth-year senior, certainly Tennessee's counting on him to be a good player. They need him to be one of their best guys. So these are three pretty natural choices to me, all guys that will handle themselves really well in that setting. And they need Tennessee they need to be good if Tennessee wants to be pretty good this year. So that's obviously, the big storyline, I think, will be just how far they can come in their second year under Jeremy Pruitt and just, the new coaches. I think you're going to be hearing a lot about Jim Chaney and Derek Ansley and T. Martin and the impact those guys can have and just how much better some of those guys who are going down there can get this year, especially Jarrett Garantano and how much he can get better.
Well, also Daryl Taylor, obviously the big defensive lineman, making it down there, and he's seems to be, if there's ever going to be a spokesperson for the team, that it's Pruitt has no problem with it. What he did, a promotional video for the spring game on the team's Twitter account, and he's always seemingly accessible as well. And I really think Daryl Taylor is one of those diamond in the rough kind of players that he may be a better pro than he is a college player.
Yeah, again, this is just sort of an example of how development is different for everybody. I think he's always had this kind of talent, but he sort of came out of high school so rough around the edges and needing to be developed physically that he was really lean coming out of high school. Played some wide receiver in high school. He was sort of a 210-pound lean edge rusher, and now to have him having bulked up into the 250 to 260 range, he's obviously a much different player now. And I think it just took him a couple of years to sort of put it together and develop on and off the field, and he's really got it going now, I think. And as a fifth year senior, I think he's primed for a good year if he can continue to build on what he did last year at times. Had a couple of really big games with multiple sacks. Now he just needs to do it more consistently, and I think he's got a chance to do that.
Ryan Callahan at Ryan Callahan 24/7, Go Vols 24/7. Juwan Jennings, I don't know how they'll report his progress and everything. Obviously, the knee scope coming out, but that's one of those things that shouldn't be long term. He should be ready to go probably by August, right?
That certainly is the hope and the expectation. If there was anybody that had to go through that, it's Juwan Jennings. You're not too worried about a guy like him who played through really some limitations last year that not a lot of people would have played through and been as effective as they were. When you look back on it, he was one of Tennessee's most productive receivers, despite having off-season surgery and coming off a missed 2017 season. So he did pretty well last year under the circumstances. I think they feel like they can sort of manage him being out or at least a portion of preseason camp, and then we'll see beyond that how much they have to manage him. It's something that's a concern going into the season, but obviously he's one of those guys that as long as, even if he has to miss some practices during the week or practice on a limited basis, I think they'll feel confident in him as long as he's got the ability to go out there and play. But clearly he's not had health on his side the last couple of years, and it was a tough break for him to have to deal with that. But Tennessee, I think, feels he can manage that about as well as anyone on this team. As far as being able to come back at maybe less than 100% and still be effective.
Ryan Callahan, recruiting editor at GoVols 24/7. You can get him on Twitter at Ryan Callahan 24/7. I guess what we're in a dead period right now for what, another week and a half or so.
Yeah, almost 2 weeks.
Okay. So what?
Yeah, the 24th is when things when that sort of ends and colleges get about one more week after that because it goes from the 24th through the 31st you essentially get that last week of July to host some visitors, and that'll be the last chance to really host any prospects until the start of the season, because you know you've recently had an August dead period as well that sort of left colleges and high school players focus on their start of the season. So that's a big deal, and that's why these summer you don't get to go out on the road, obviously, really during the summer. So it's important to get guys on campus, and now you only have about a month altogether between the first few weeks of June and the end of July to put all that together. So it's a really important time, and sort of will give you a better idea in some cases of which schools kids are really looking at, because I think some of the guys who are looking to make decisions fairly soon, and in some cases maybe even before their season start, you know, this next visit could be sort of an indicator of someone they're looking at, or which direction they may be leaning, or it could make a difference in their decision. So this is an important time if you follow recruiting to you know, kind of see where guys are going once the dead period ends. And in the meantime, schools are still, you know, obviously staying in contact with players during this dead period and trying to jockey for position and get those guys on campus when it opens back up here in about a week and a half to 2 weeks.
One player I see play every game this year. We do the Innsworth games here on National Sports Radio every Friday night, and I, along with Jonathan Schaefer, Dan Bradley, and myself, we do the games. And obviously, I'm familiar with Keyshawn Lawrence, and it's, you know, he plays both sides of the ball, but obviously, he's a safety and he's a big time safety. I think that commitment, though, getting in here into Nashville, I thought, you know, once again, pulling a player out of here, you see Jeremy Pruitt and that state recruiting, I think, start to open up more.
It is, and I think that is a big sign, because this is a guy that, you know, doesn't have a family connection to Tennessee. He didn't necessarily grow up a huge Tennessee fan. So this is the kind of in-state battle that I think was sort of a litmus test for Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt's staff. I think they identified him early on. It doesn't take much looking at him to see he's the kind of defensive back that a coach like Jeremy Pruitt wants. He's really tall and long, around 6'1". 195, and really athletic at that size. Tested really well at the opening finals. Had the seventh best overall football rating, they call it, that sort of gauges just overall athleticism. And to have those kinds of numbers at that size, really impressive. And even if he can't play corner, this is a guy who could play, I think, multiple spots in the secondary. I think corner's a possibility, though, and safety may be his best position. But regardless, this is a guy who can play somewhere in the secondary and be really good. So get that kind of player in state and beat out some programs like Miami and South Carolina, LSU, Ole Miss, to get a guy like that, that's an impressive pull and a good job by Jeremy Pruitt, obviously, and his staff sort of starting to get some traction in state after last year was, I think, sort of a tough first year to walk into with some tough calls to make on some guys. This year they've been going after some guys for a long time. Keyshawn Lawrence is one of them, and they're, you know, I think that's a sign that they've got things at least going in the right direction in state.
Well, his former Innsworth teammate Tyler Barron transfers this season for his senior year to Knoxville Catholic. 6'4", 250, strong side, defensive end. Is it just a given, by large part, by this move to finish his high school career in Knoxville, is it a given that he's going to be a Vol?
I don't think it's a given, but I think you certainly feel pretty good about it if you're Tennessee. If you're not familiar with Tyler Barron, his father is on Tennessee's staff, Patrick Abernathy. He used to be the director of high school relations under Butch Jones. Now he works in player development on Jeremy Pruitt's staff. So he's had that connection for a few years. His brother also, Woody Barron, played at Virginia Tech a few years ago. So that was sort of one of the programs that was always thought to be a possible contender. He's been to a few other places this year, Ohio State, Oklahoma had him on his first official visit last month. But, you know, certainly no. The thing to me is no other strong contenders really emerge. I don't think there's a clear number two even that's right there behind Tennessee. So I think that's one of the reasons you feel pretty good, I think, if you're Tennessee, that Tyler Barron ultimately ends up in your class. But he's had no timeline for a decision. Could come this summer, could stretch into the season. But right now I think Tennessee's positioned itself pretty well. And, again, Keyshawn Lawrence is a close friend of his. So having landed him and Cooper Mays, his teammate at Knoxville Catholic, a couple more connections there that will only help Tennessee in the long run. Get Tyler Barron in his class.